So I want to start by acknowledging the colleagues that helped to do this work and to put this presentation together. So Ginny Cassidy, Bryn, and Karen DeLuhash in our Seattle office, who aren't able to be here today, and David Fine. I'm not really sure if it was just coincidence that we ended up in the same session, but hopefully this will be not too redundant because this is actually an entirely different project with a different data set. So we looked at reduction of pap smears among young women in Title X family planning clinics in Region 10. And I will tell you more about that, although it sounds like a lot of folks in here are familiar with Title X. So some of this may be a little bit of review, but I wanted to make sure that everyone's on the same page. And I have no financial interest to disclose. I work for CARDIA, which is an organization that provides training, organizational development, and evaluation and research services to other organizations to help them deliver better services to their clients. One of the things we do, as you saw with David's presentation, is work with a lot of programmatic data, so real data from real clinics serving real clients. And as David mentioned, that data can have a lot of limitations, but it is also a strength because it means that we get to do a lot of program improvement analyses, take a look at the data for clinics that often don't have the capacity to do that in-house, and then work with them to brainstorm some ways to bridge gaps that we've identified. So just by way of background, in 2009, the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, released some revised recommendations for cervical cancer screening, delaying pap smear initiation to age 21 and also reducing frequency of pap smears for older women. The Federal Title X Family Planning Program is a major provider of cervical cancer screening because this program serves women and men coming to public and private clinics throughout the U.S. By providing reproductive health services, of which pap smears are an important component. In working with the Title X grantees in Region 10, which is Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Alaska, we have provided service to them in a variety of ways. We provide training, which includes an annual reproductive health conference for providers in the region. We also do a lot of on-site training in TA, where we go in and do one-on-one, more tailored help to them to improve their services. And then we also get data. So we've facilitated making sure that the data gets to OPA to meet the Title X requirements, and then we also have utilized that data to do analyses and work with our clinics for program improvement purposes. What we aim to do here is sort of an example of some of the work that we've done with our clinic sites. So we took a look at the updated pap smear recommendations and looked at the activities that were done in the region to promote the new recommendations. And then we also took a look at the data from the clinics to look at adherence to the new guidelines. So cervical cancer is a big problem worldwide. It's a leading cause of cancer-related death in developing countries and still a cause of death in the United States, even though it is largely preventable and treatable. So clearly screening is really important. So why did the recommendations change? Well, the goal of any screening program is to maximize the benefits of screening and also minimize any harms that can occur due to screening. So pap smears are important because they detect cellular abnormalities early on that can, in some cases, lead to cervical cancer and allow us to prevent that. Historically, because of that, annual pap smear were recommended for all sexually active women. However, a closer look at the data showed that most cases of HPV, and HPV is very common, over 50% of sexually active people will get HPV at some point during their lifetime. But while HPV is very common, it almost always resolves, and so the percentage of people that get cervical cancer is actually pretty low, especially among young women. So a pap smear that comes back with abnormal cellular signs can prompt clinicians to do other more invasive procedures that have been shown to be associated with preterm delivery and low birth weight infants, not to mention the emotional side effect and stigma of being diagnosed with an STI and being told that you may eventually get cancer. Again, cervical cancer, if you do have an HPV infection that leads to cervical cancer, it is pretty slow to develop. The majority of cases occur in women that are over age 30 or even older. So there's a really pretty wide window of time in which to do a pap smear and detect early signs. So because of that, ACOG and several other bodies that make recommendations change their recommendations. This is a summary of all the recommendations. Like I said, they delayed onset of screening to age 21, regardless of sexual activity, and reduced pap smear frequency among older women to be between every 2 to 3 years, depending on which organization you talk to. So for this analysis, we decided to look just at women under the age of 21, because in Title X family planning programs is a fairly mobile population of clients. A lot of them do not come to the clinic every year for an exam. And so these recommendations are really based on the assumption that you're seeing women each year. And it's really up to a provider to determine if she has a woman over age 21 sitting in her office, do I think this woman's going to come back in the next 2 to 3 years? And if not, I should probably screen her now. So it was a little too complicated to look at the older age group for this analysis. As most of you know, the Title X program is directed by the Office of Population Affairs and supports reproductive health services for low-income men and women at family planning clinics. And women pay for their services based on a sliding fee scale based on their income. We work in Region 10, which is Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. We have a lot of data at our disposal. We have data from 285 Title X clinics, providing service to 250,000 women on an annual basis. And data is collected from these clinics during all clinic visits. There's a standardized set of measures that are collected. So you don't really need to see the details on this, but this is a snapshot of the standardized measures that we collect across all of the clinics. Which includes demographic information about the clients as well as medical services provided. So pap smear is one of those tiny little checkboxes on the form. And as I mentioned, we have also hosted an annual reproductive health conference for Title X providers. So specifically what we wanted to do was to describe efforts in the Region 10 Title X clinics to promote awareness of these new recommendations, examine trends in pap smears among women under age 21 from the period of 2008 to 2011, and then explore factors associated with pap smears among women under age 21. So we reviewed the conference programs from our annual RH conferences to look for sessions related to pap guidelines. We compiled demographic and service data, so that's that big form you saw, for all female patients under the age of 21 between 2008 to 2011. And we calculated the percentage of women that received a pap smear by age and year. And then lastly, did some multivariate regression analyses to look at some associations between pap smear and client characteristics. So this is just a snapshot of some of the sessions that were done at our annual reproductive health conference related to pap guidelines. As you can see, we had new guidelines highlighted at every conference between 2009 and this year, 2012, including two plenary sessions. So there was a lot of exposure to the new guidelines. This is certainly not an extensive, all-encompassing list of everything that was done in the region to promote the new guidelines, but just sort of give us a sense of the fact that this really has been on the radar for a number of years. This is probably the most important slide, and thankfully it's pretty simple. This is the percentage of female clients under the age of 21 that had a pap smear between 2008 and 2011. And as you can see, it dropped pretty rapidly over that time period. By 2011, only 1.6% of women under the age of 21 were getting pap smears. So that's good news. That means that the recommendations have been heard and applied in almost all cases. The next thing that we wanted to look at were, for women who are still getting pap smears, are there any client characteristics associated with those pap smears? Or in other words, are some clients more likely to be screened than others? And so we looked at age, insurance status, race, ethnicity, and state. So this is looking at age group. And as you can see in the third column over the whole time period that we looked at, Women aged 18 to 20 were the most likely to get a pap smear, about 14% of them, followed by women 15 to 17, and then a very, very small percentage of women 10 to 14. We then decided for our multivariate regression analyses to look just at the year 2011, because that's really the most recent year of data available and probably the best predictor of what's currently happening in the clinics, as opposed to looking over the whole time period when the changes were being implemented. So if that made no sense to you, I have a graph. So this is the percentage of females that had a pap smear broken out by age. The red line at the top is females 18 to 20, the green line is females 15 to 17, and the blue line is females 10 to 14. So what we can see here is that while in 2008, before the recommendations changed, there did seem to be some disparities in screening according to age, they really reduced over the time period, and screening was reduced across the board regardless of age. By 2011, you can see that 2.3% of women 18 to 20 are still getting pap smears, so still slightly higher than the other age groups, but it's dramatically reduced. Looking by insurance status, we also saw some small differences in pap smears over the time period that we looked at. Women who were uninsured or women with unknown insurance status had slightly higher rates of pap smears. Women with public insurance had slightly lower rates. But again, when we looked at the adjusted odds ratio for 2011, we saw most of those differences were wiped out, and actually women with private insurance were slightly less likely to get a pap smear. But again, we're talking about very small numbers by that year. Looking by race ethnicity, we saw that over the time period that we looked at, white and Asian women were most likely to get a pap smear, and black women were least likely to get a pap smear. But by 2011, all racial and ethnic differences had been eliminated. And here's a kind of ugly graph. But what you can see here is that top blue line is white women. In 2008, about 20% of white women were getting pap smears, compared to only about 12% of black women. That's the green line. And by 2011, because of the reduction across the board, those disparities were pretty much reduced. We also looked by state. As I said, we have four states in our region, and saw that Alaska and Oregon had slightly higher rates across the time period that we looked at, where Idaho and Washington had lower rates of pap smears. But again, this was eliminated over the time period. Here you can see that Idaho initially had the highest rates of pap smears, and then were actually the fastest to implement the changes. So that's the green line that drops off, and then everyone else seemed to follow suit. One other thing that we wanted to add into the analysis was a look at other preventive health services and how they may be impacted by the reduction in pap smears. So we looked at, this is a graph of chlamydia screening. The blue line is the percentage of women that were screened for chlamydia. The green line is the percentage of women that had a pap smear. And the reason we looked at this is because historically, chlamydia screening was done primarily by cervical swab, which was recommended at a woman's annual exam, and we were concerned that in the effort to reduce pap smears among this age group that we might inadvertently be reducing other preventive health services like chlamydia screening in the same group. As you can see here in this graph, that did not happen in Region 10. We actually saw an increase in chlamydia screening over the time period that we looked at while we saw the decrease in pap smears. I think it's important to acknowledge the work that's been done in Region 10. They've really led the nation in promoting the use of self-collected vaginal swabs for chlamydia screening and ensuring that chlamydia screening can happen during visits where no pelvic exam is done. And that in some areas across the country have been slower to adopt that practice. And I'm going to be doing actually another presentation tomorrow morning where I'm talking a little bit more about vaginal swabs. But I do want to acknowledge that because I think that in a lot of cases where that was not promoted as highly, we might not see this trend. So just to summarize the results that we just showed, pap smears among females under the age of 21 were virtually eliminated over the three-year period since the guidelines came out. The odds of screening in 2008 were much, much higher than they are now in 2011. We did see some differences in screening according to client demographic characteristics initially. Women who were older, this is actually a table, women who were publicly insured, I'm sorry, women who were uninsured or had unknown insurance status, women who were white and women who received services in Alaska or Oregon were much more likely to get pap smears initially. But over the period of time during which these agencies were working to reduce pap smears, these screening differences were virtually eliminated. We did see that older clients and clients with private insurance are still slightly more likely to be screened, but we're talking about very small numbers. We also saw that reduction in pap smears among young patients did not appear to negatively impact STD screening. Again, I'm not confident that we would see that across the nation. I think it depends on the extent to which they've also emphasized other methods of chlamydia screening. What we've seen is that Title X family clinics were able to quickly learn about and adapt the new recommendations, successfully decreased pap smears among women under age 21, have reduced screening disparities among women under age 21, although this may be just a byproduct of reducing screening across the board, and have continued to provide other preventive health services while making this change. A limitation, as I mentioned in the beginning, is that we did not explore adoption and adherence to the new screening recommendations for women over the age of 21, as I said, because many Title X clinics do not see their clients on an annual basis or even close to it. And a pap smear is recommended in situations where the provider thinks the client may be unlikely to return. So using the programmatic data that we have available, and we don't have any kind of idea of whether a client might be likely to return, we don't have a great way of looking at this. The other thing I wanted to mention is, although I know I sounded like a broken record saying the differences in screening were reduced over the time period, I think that was really a byproduct of just trying to cut screening across the board in this age group. And so I think a next step would be to look into screening disparities among older age groups. So this is my contact information. Feel free to contact me if you have questions. And I think we're taking questions after everyone has presented. Thank you.